Welcome to Failure. I'm Ryan Kavanaugh. This is the place where, as they say, success has many fathers and failure has none. Well, failure has found a father. Tell me what that means. Like, so it comes out, it gets terrible critics. You have MGM, you have sponsors, you're the boss, you've got the...
Well, no, no one else was involved. No other companies were involved. This was LWT and me.
So you're now the head of LWT, which at the time, one of the biggest
London
in
Weekend
London.
Television. It was the biggest provider of entertainment shows for ITV.
So enough for people who don't know, ITV today is still one of the largest owners and production companies of television throughout the world, not just London.
Yeah.
Largest provider in London, was your moment, and it fails. And what happened? What? Tell me about your life, what you were feeling, what was going on around you, what were your friends like?
I mean, I didn't really have any enemies. It was just my friends that hated me at the time.
It's a good way to say it.
And it was, you get in this position and you screw up. What are you going to do about it? Luckily enough, we were making a lot of television programs. And I'd created two or three other programs that were being made during this time by other producers. But they were my babies.
Right.
Record of the Year, My Kind of Music, different programs that I sort of said, make this, do that. A great one called Don't Try This at Home, with dangerous stunts and everything, that were becoming really successful. So they were my babies, but other people had made them and made them well.
Now, had these already come out when the other one failed, or they were
No.
So I
they were
focus.
In the process.
I want to go back to before they come out. Mm. This show's come out, and do you remember a specific time? Like, I remember for me, like I can relate it to a movie, you know, of like one of my first.
This
movies.
Was 1996.
And do you remember like the where you were when you're like that? You get that punch in the stomach, like, oh, I just what I thought was going to be so big. Just collapsed.
Well, as I said, over 9 weeks, that punch in the stomach just kept punching.
So one of those you...
So you just think, oh...
Is that one of those when you wake up in the morning and you don't want to open your eyes?
There was slagging it off on the radio. They were laughing about it in late night shows.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just horrible. I couldn't turn anything on without hearing how pitiful this show was and agreeing with them. And realizing the bad mistakes that we'd made, the terrible mistakes we'd made. If he's the ice master, why isn't he on the ice? You know, they're questions that I would have said.
But
I was so involved with it at the time.
Which, you know, happens in the creative process, but a lot of people hit that wall, especially, you know, your late 30s, early 40s, and you just went from like, I thought I made it to just a total collapse. And I know that feeling of like, you don't even want to open your eyes in the morning because you just don't want to see the negative. Like, what are they going to say about it today? But
my youngest son was working in the City of London in stocks and shares and money changing. And my eldest son was working in television, both of whom were taking abuse.
Yeah, it was so big. Span your family. It's been everywhere.
It was a big. Our biggest night on television is Saturday night in England, which I was shocked it isn't here. But England Saturday night television is it, and it was just in your face.
So you couldn't miss it.
You couldn't miss it.
So what did you do? Because a lot of people, and this is kind of I'd say goes to the core of what we try to share with the world here is like, there's that moment now where you can either give up. You could just say, like, I'm done, like a lot of people would do, probably majority of people, or you find the next step forward. You get out of bed, even though you don't want to get out of bed. You brush your teeth, you brush your hair, you put on your clothes, you go look people in the eyes, and you push forward. And that's, to me, the hardest thing to do, and yet the most important. How did you do that, and what did you do?
Well, I was still editing the shows as well, which didn't really help. Same show. While it was going out, so I was about 2 weeks behind. But we had coming up a Royal Variety performance that, I mean, I danced in a Royal Variety performance, I choreographed one, I directed one.
So this was kind of in the can and hadn't come out yet?
No, this hadn't been made. This is made live.
Oh, okay.
This is live for Her Majesty the Queen.
Okay. So this is another big deal that you have.
And it had to be done. And it was my baby.
Did you ever think before that, like, I'm not going to do this, I'm done?
No. This, for me, was, you know, one of the great honors.
Did you think they were going to cancel it? Was there a moment where you're like, oh, shit, they're not going to let me do that based on the other show?
No. It took my mind off what was going badly here.
Right.
Talking about failing, there was one time on it, I was dancing, going back in history here, because I've just remembered something. Eartha Kitt was this American singer. She was hugely successful, but she was singing, When the Moon is in the Seventh House, from Hair.
Oh, yeah.
And Jupiter aligns with Mars. And it was finger cymbal time. And one of the dancers, Ken, Warwick, his name was, had to put his... Oh, we were like this. So she's like that in the front. Ken's like that in the middle. And I'm sort of like that at the bottom. So it looks like she's got six arms. At one point, Ken has to pick her up so that now her legs come up, right? I then, at a certain point, have to put my arms around the pair of them and using thighs, because that's your biggest muscle.
Because they're huge thighs.
Literally lift the pair of them up. And Her Majesty the Queen's there, as I said, finger cymbals, so it's nice and quiet. Every bit of air was expelled out of my ass during the whole time that I'm holding them in the air.
So you just let out a giant fart.
It just went, it wasn't let out. It was let out. It just went on as I'm holding. And I just put them.
So you farted in front of the Queen.
All of a sudden, can you imagine? For somebody that is.
On TV. And it's live.
Yeah.
That's better than the next failure. I'm sorry. That's a great failure. Oh. I mean, how many people could say, I mistakenly farted on live TV right in front of the Queen? So, okay, you've done this show and you've failed and you failed miserably. And as you said, it's now affecting your family, it's affecting you, but you just pushed forward. You never thought to give up.
Well, I went and did this, I just remembered something else happened. So I'm doing the Royal Variety Performance and I have to walk Her Majesty down the line and introduce her to the acts at the end of the show. So the comedian called Joe Pasquale is on, and Joe Pasquale has got a very high voice like that. And he does old gags. Why did the Mexican throw his wife over the cliff? Tequila! So he's just a silly, silly comedian. He walks on with a camel. Now, we've put a cork up the camel's ass because you don't want it defecating on the stage in front of Her Majesty. Her Majesty's had enough with a fart. She doesn't need to see any crap on the stage. As he gets into the center, and I can't remember what the gag was with the camel, but the camel farts. The cork goes flying across the stage. At the end of the show, Her Majesty's walking down the line, and she comes to Joe Pasquale. She said, oh, Mr. Pasquale. She said, what sort of camel was that? And he said, I think it was a dromedary, ma'am. She said, no, Mr. Pasquale, it was a very naughty camel. She had a great sense of humor.
That's amazing. Yeah. What an amazing. You had two farts in front of the Queen.
It wasn't mine. That
okay,
was
but back to, okay, you're at this low, but you have this hope. And so you're picking yourself up. And I want you to tell me as much about that period of time as you can remember. Your family, you said your kids were getting kind of harassed because of how bad it was failed. It was the most public humiliating failure.
Yeah.
But
the realization, of why it was failing was the most important thing. I think out of things that I've done badly in my life, I've learned more out of them than things that I've done well. Things that I've done well is like a pat on the back and great. The things that haven't worked or you failed at, you try and figure out why. Why didn't I realize this, which is obvious when you now watch it? Why? And you suddenly go, you're caught up in it. You're just caught up in it. And the first thing that flies out of the window is common sense. The first thing is common sense. Just look at everything from a distance, not when you're on top of it and trying to work out the mishigos of it. And for me, that was about, I didn't care. I didn't know anybody in it. I didn't want to know anybody in it. The games didn't really make sense. That a lot of that was to do with we were dropped in it by having to lose so many. But the fact was, I didn't care as a viewer.
So, you know, it's interesting, as you say, you were saying you learn from failing, you know, the success is this. And that's the whole point of why I do the show, because I've failed a lot more than I've succeeded. And I think I've had a lot of success, but those are these moments. But yeah. I've learned every time you fail and have to pick yourself up and think, why did I fail? But a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people fail and think, woe is me. Why did this happen to me? As if, you know, the world somehow was out to get them, because that's why they must have failed, not looking inside.
Well, nowadays, don't you feel that people, especially younger people, feel as though the world owes them something?
We were just talking about this. It's crazy, because it's the everybody gets a trophy generation, which I don't understand. It's the, you know, oh, you don't fail. You just, you know, nobody wants to work hard. You know, there's no such thing as like, oh, pick yourself back up. And, you know, everybody's just kind of like, they're just going to give it to me. I don't need to work hard.
So we'll get onto this when I talk about American Idol.
Okay.
Because
so let's go back to this. The essence of this is
you. I'm now making other programs. And don't forget, I've got a whole team of producers underneath me now.
And you've never thought at this point, because this is what's so important for our audience, is you never thought to give up. You thought to look and say, I don't care what the world thinks. I fucked up. How did I fuck up? I got to fix that, use it going forward, and move on.
Yeah. And also the fact that now I've got to worry more about my department rather than just me and what I want to make.
Right.
So I've now got, you know, 10 or 12 other producers underneath me that I need to find programs for, or have them bring me a program idea that I say, yes, go ahead and make it. Because I am now the producer, the gamekeeper, everything.
So you're taking this failure and you're saying, I'm analyzing why I did it and I'm bringing it forward to these 12 other shows that I'm overseeing to make sure they don't make the same mistake. And what happened with those?
They were successful. I mean, we had maybe two or three other failures, but you are only, when you are in charge of, and I was making 200 hours of television, you are only as good as the worst performing program. It doesn't matter that you're killing it with these top echelon of programs.
Right.
It's this one down here that isn't getting, you know, the percentage that they want, that they're going to look on you as being a failure. Well, hold on, no, there's a ton of other programs that we're making. So it's a difficult position to be in, I've got to say, as the controller of so much. So then I get a phone call from my son, who has now gone out to make Gladiators, to assist them make Gladiators in Australia. And he's now working for that company that made Gladiators in Australia. And he said, Dad, I want you to come out and see this program. It's called Pop Stars. And it's a different form of talent show. So my wife and I decide we're going to go out. This is now for the millennium, 2000. We go out, and I love Sydney, you know, Australia's a great place. And I watched this television show, and it had the exposure of the audition process with tough judges, and one particularly mean one that would say nasty things, not as bad as we actually did here in America, but he was, you can't sing. Why have you come to audition? You're wasting my time, you're wasting your own time. So we go out to Australia and I watch this television show. It's an hour long. And I think, I've never seen the audition process before of kids literally auditioning to be on a show with singing. You generally, they're either on the show or they come along. And it was just fascinating to watch. I thought, I want to buy this format for LWT. So I negotiate to buy the format, and somebody else has offered, Sky Television has offered money for it. And I list everything that we've done at LWT and what I've done. I said, look, I'm the person to make this. Ex-choreographer, producer, blah, 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 comedy, blah, 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 blah. And they eventually say, okay, Nigel, you can have it. I come back, I call up Simon Fuller, who was the manager of the Spice Girls, and I'd done a number of shows with LWT with the Spice Girls, so I knew him quite well. I said, this is to find a group, two boys, three girls. There will be three judges, one of whom will be a tough guy. I said, I'd love you to manage the group that is chosen.
Interesting.
And he said, oh, okay, I like that idea. He said, only if you take the publicist from my company as one of the judges. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll do that. I said, I'm obviously going to use the record executive who's going to produce the record.
What's the publicist's name?
Nikki Chapman.
Okay.
She was the publicist for Spice Girls, S Club 7. I called Simon Cowell. And I said to Simon, would you consider being a judge? I'd met him numerous years on a program I did called Record of the Year. He had a band called Westlife that generally did very well. And I said, I'd love you to be a judge. And he said, oh, yeah, I'd like that. So now I've got Simon Cowell, Simon Fuller, Nikki Chapman. I go to Polydor Records, Universal. A guy now who runs Universal, Lucian Grange, here in, runs the whole thing.
I know Lucian. Also from the UK.
I sell the idea of this group to them, and we do a record deal, which again, for London Weekend Television to be doing record deals, this is...
It's uncharted territory.
Uncharted territory.
Never happened.
So everyone's loving it. Simon Cowell pulls out. Now, he's never really admitted why to me in all these years, why he pulled out. It's my belief that his record company, which was Sony at the point, said, why on earth
Universal
are we
and Sony?
Choosing a band to give to Universal?
Yeah, it's like the two enemies working together.
Big time. So he pulled out. So I then call up another guy who's pretty cruel, fun but cruel, called Jonathan King. And he says yes, and then he's imprisoned.
Oh, no. Talk about...
As an accused pedophile. So I'm now stuck with a week to go, and...
He's going to shoot in a week now.
Yeah, and I'm told, you should do it, Nigel.
And this because, is going to be American Idol.
Yeah.
Right.
No.
It was a precursor to American Idol.
Don't even think American Idol. This is Pop Stars.
Okay.
It was created by a lady called Julie Christie in New Zealand.
Got it. Okay.
And was a hit in Australia. I am now going to do it as the judge. I've auditioned kids all my life as a choreographer. Yeah.
And you can play an asshole so well. And, you don't really have
I'm
to pretend.
I'm being the asshole. So now I'm using lines on these poor kids that come in front of me like, you sang all the right notes. Unfortunately, you put them in the wrong order, which was an old comedy line that I worked on a show years before. And I'm now called in our national newspapers, and England have got numerous national newspapers, Nasty Nigel.
Nasty Nigel.
Nasty Nigel. As I say, I'm using comedy lines against them. It's, you know, you're auditioning somebody at 9 o'clock in the morning, they're singing, oh, like this, with a down. It's really tough to get any energy at this time of the morning, isn't it? And I go, yes. I said, well, don't worry. The only energy you're going to need now is to go home. Thank you very much. Goodbye. So it was tough, but it was fair. And we put together a group of five. And they got the fastest selling single of all time in England. And that is including Candle in the Wind by Elton John when Princess Diana passed. So it still holds the record.
What was that group name?
Hearsay.
Hearsay.